Ekatra Podcast Conversations for the Curious Essential Knowledge Simplified, your gateway to essential ideas that matter most. This audio summary has been prepared with the help of Ekatra AI.
Welcome to the Deep Dive. Today, we are setting out on what feels like a really radical, thrilling journey.
Yeah.
We're looking across a whole century of creativity, exploring the vibrant heart of modern Latin American literature.
Yeah, it's quite the journey. And it's a deep dive that I think fundamentally changes how you might view literary history itself. We aren't just, you know, reading books here.
Right.
We're looking at how a whole region, one often seen as being on the periphery of global culture, actually managed to grab the central spotlight. And in doing so, kind of redefine what a novel could even be.
That really is the core mission for us today. Our guide is Roberto González Chavarria's, seminal work, Modern Latin American Literature. And our goal is to unpack this incredible story of how this writing became essentially a vital global language. It's this complex tapestry of identity, innovation, and resistance. And why this literature matters now. Well, it's the cultural engine, you could say, driving half a continent. It doesn't just sort of chronicle history passively.
Right.
It actively provides the intellectual framework for understanding cultural hybridity, political upheaval, how identity gets forged under immense pressure. It offers these really profound lessons on power, language, truth, things that are absolutely relevant, maybe more than ever, to our world today.
Okay, so before we dive into the text itself, who is the scholar leading this, frankly, massive undertaking? Tell us a bit about Roberto González Echevarria.
Right, yeah. He is, arguably the definitive voice on this subject.
Yeah.
He's currently the Sterling Professor at Yale, and crucially, he's Cuban by birth. That bicultural, bilingual background, it's absolutely key.
How does that background actually inform his analysis? Does it give him a unique angle?
Oh, completely. It gives him this crucial dual vision. He's got the insider's intimacy, you know, the feel for the cultural nuances, the historical weight of the region. But he also has the critical analytical distance. The perspective of a scholar who spent decades examining these texts within this broader context of global literary theory. He's like the perfect cultural and intellectual translator in a way.
That makes sense. And his authority, it seems, rests pretty heavily on a theoretical concept he pioneered, something called the archival novel. Now, this sounds incredibly high stakes. What exactly does that mean?
This is really where you get to the subversive heart of the literature, I think. Echevarria argues pretty powerfully that Latin American fiction defines itself by confronting, subverting, and ultimately rewriting the archive of power.
The archive, like official records.
Exactly. Think of the archive as any kind of authoritative, non-literary discourse that claims objective truth. So colonial legal codes, yeah. Or maybe 19th century scientific texts trying to classify people. Or those official histories often written by dictators or their regimes.
Wow. So the novel isn't just telling a story in this view. It's actively committing a kind of intellectual resistance. It looks at the official history book, the legal document, and basically says, hang on, that's not the full story. Here's the real truth.
Precisely. His work shows how, over like two centuries, the Latin American novelist has consistently usurped the power traditionally held by, say, the lawyer, the historian, maybe the political scientist. Fiction becomes the truest, the most human, and often the most politically profound story of the continent.
That framework really helps us get a handle on the book's central thesis, then. And Echevarria argues the strength of this literature comes from its unique synthesis, this cultural mestizaje.
Mestizaje, yeah, or hybridization. That's the defining feature. The literature's profound power, he argues, stems from this creative, sometimes messy, but ultimately transformative blending of indigenous traditions, European ones, mainly Spanish and Portuguese and African traditions too.
Yeah.
It's not just like a collection of separate ingredients.
It's a new compound altogether.
Exactly. It's a completely new cultural compound forged in the crucible of history.
And the core insight here, I guess, is that through this unique synthesis and also through the distinctive, often really radical techniques they had to invent these writers, managed to speak simultaneously to hyper-specific regional experiences. You know, like life under a dictatorship or surviving in the Amazonian jungle.
Right. Very specific contexts.
And also to these universal human conditions, things like love, chaos, memory, time itself.
Absolutely. And the book itself, it's this sweeping survey. It traces the whole journey, right from the first attempts to break away from just imitating European models all the way up to the present. But what makes Echevarria's approach so valuable, I think, is that he presents this evolution as one cohesive argument.
It's not just a list of authors.
No, not at all. It's about the development of ideas and forms, how they build on each other, react against each other. And by tracking this evolution, we hope we can provide you, the listener, with this kind of intellectual toolkit, a way to understand the cultural soul of Latin America that goes way beyond, you know, the usual surface-level stereotypes.
Okay, let's start tracing that literary evolution then. Where do we begin? Maybe at the foundations of modernity, late 19th century, with Modernismo. That seems like the first really assertive search for an independent voice.
It really was. You've got figures like Ruben Dorio, José Martí leading the charge. Modernismo was the first truly indigenous literary movement from Latin America to get significant international recognition. It was fundamentally an aesthetic rebellion.
A rebellion against what, exactly?
Well, against the perceived sort of provincialism of Latin America at the time. They looked outwards, consciously, towards French symbolism, other European avant-garde. They wanted to assert cultural independence by proving they could be just as formally perfect, just as sophisticated as any writer in Paris or London.
Okay, so proving their chops on the world stage.
Right. But there's a tension there, and Martí especially highlighted it. It's this dangerous pull. How much do you look outward for that aesthetic validation versus how much do you look inward for an authentic identity, one rooted in the continent's own diverse, often difficult reality? That tension becomes really central.
And that tension, it sounds like it comes to a head in the next major phase. Echevarria identifies the 1920s through the 1940s. The focus shifts to the land itself, the novela de la tierra.
Yeah, the novel of the land. These were often massive, geographically ambitious novels. Think of classics like Doña Barbara by Romulo Gallegos or The Vortex by José Eustasio Rivera. They were absolutely crucial for, like, mapping the continent imaginatively.
Mapping it.
Yeah, depicting this epic struggle often framed as civilization represented by the city. Order, law versus barbarism. The untamed nature of the jungle, the plains, the indigenous population sometimes. They were trying to create these grand national epics by confronting the sheer overwhelming physical scale of the continent.
But Echevarria points out there was a kind of structural limitation to these big, sweeping, realist epics. What was holding them back?
Well, he argues they were often constrained by what you might call a positivist sociological framework. Basically, they tried a bit too hard to be realistic diagnoses of the nation's problems.
It's like a government report.
Almost, yeah. Like an earnest government report trying to analyze social breakdown or economic issues. The problem was the reality they were trying to capture, the chaos, the surrealism, the political violence, the deep spiritual complexity of the continent, often defied that kind of neat, rational diagnosis. You know, you can't really capture a ghost story or the trauma of a civil war with just statistics and social analysis.
Right. So if the traditional realist form was actually failing to capture the truth of the continent, maybe the only solution was to invent entirely new literary tools. Who were the key innovators who made that breakthrough happen?
Ah, now we get to the pivotal figures, the architects, as Echevarria calls them, of the 1940s and 50s. You absolutely have to talk about Jorge Luis Borges and Alejo Carpentier. They broke decisively with realism, and that really paved the way for the subsequent boom.
Okay, Borges first. How did he change the game?
Borges, well, he kind of universalized Latin American literature, but paradoxically, by turning away from depicting external reality, at least directly, he dove inward into metaphysics, philosophy, the nature of time and identity. His fictions, those intricate labyrinths, the infinite libraries, they showed that even a short story could be this complex philosophical machine.
So he wasn't just writing about Argentina.
No, he was using Argentine settings sometimes, but engaging with these core universal questions of identity, reality, time. He demonstrated that Latin America wasn't just interesting for its exotic landscapes or political turmoil. It was a site of profound intellectual inquiry on par with anywhere else.
Okay, and then you have Alejo Carpentier, who famously theorized lo real maravilloso, the marvelous real. How does that fit in?
This is such a crucial concept, and distinct from what people often think of as fantasy. Carpentier argued that Latin America's reality is inherently strange and marvelous. Not because authors were just making things up, adding fantasy elements.
But because of the history itself.
Exactly. Because of its violent historical collisions, its cultural clashes, you know, African mythology bumping up against European Baroque architecture, indigenous beliefs alongside modern technology. The reality itself demanded a literature that embraced the strange and the wonderful. Because a purely rational, realistic account would actually be insufficient, maybe even false. His marvels are rooted in history. In context, not just imagination.
That concept that the reality itself is marvelous feels like the perfect bridge to the triumphant boom of the 1960s and 70s. This is the moment the continent truly captured the world stage, right? With huge names like García Márquez, Vargas Llosa, Cortázar, Fuentes.
This was definitely the culmination, the big arrival.
Yeah.
And Echeverria's treatment of magical realism here is, I think, definitive. He really emphasizes that it's not just escapist fantasy. It's not about fairies and dragons.
What is it then?
He calls it a powerful epistemological tool, a way of knowing. A way of understanding. It was a technique, he argues, that was absolutely necessary for representing a reality that was just too layered, too chaotic, too complex for conventional realism to grasp adequately.
So, for example, something like García Márquez's Macondo in 100 Years of Solitude. Only a tool like magical realism could really handle the simultaneous layers of myth, colonial legacy, civil war, banana plantations, family courses, and deep, deep history that define a place like that.
Exactly. García Márquez created this utterly convincing mythical space by blending the miraculous and the mundane with this incredibly deadpan, matter-of-fact tone. But importantly, the story doesn't just end with the boom's triumph. By the 1980s, we move into what's called the post-boom. And that's defined in part by a reaction against the epic scale of those total novels of the boom.
Interesting. So what replaces that grand unified narrative ambition? Does the focus change?
It does shift, yeah. There's a noticeable turn towards, say, urban realism, focusing on city life, not just the jungle or the plains. There's a greater engagement with testimonial literature, narratives of witnessing political violence directly, and crucially, the undeniable rise of powerful female voices.
Like Isabel Allende.
Isabel Allende is a prime example, yes.
Yeah.
Writers like her often focus more on personal history, family sagas, the political effects on private lives, rather than attempting to write the definitive epic history of the nation in the way some boon writers maybe did.
And stylistically? Do we see changes there too, moving beyond magical realism?
Oh, definitely. You see the emergence of figures like the Chilean writer Roberto Bolaño, who really represents the more skeptical, perhaps more fragmented tone of the new millennium.
Right.
His work often grapples with the ruins left by political violence, the dictatorships, and also kind of the disillusioned legacy of the boom generation itself.
So less epic, more.
More fragmented narratives, yeah. Stories about failed writers, dark corruption, hidden histories, marginal figures. The idea of a single unified voice telling the whole story seems to shatter, maybe reflecting a more globalized, interconnected, and sometimes more melancholic Latin America.
That whole century-long evolution is just fascinating. It shows literature constantly inventing itself, reacting to its political and historical context in real time. Okay, let's step back for a moment and maybe summarize the key thematic messages that Echeverria really leaves us with. You mentioned theme one earlier, cultural mestizaje.
Yes, absolutely central. The strength of this whole literary tradition lies in synthesis, in blending, not in isolation or purity. It powerfully challenges any notion of cultural purity anywhere, really, by showing that the most vital creative energy often arises from that productive, sometimes difficult interaction of indigenous, European, and African elements. And it forces us maybe to ask, where in our own cultures today are we seeing strength emerge from synthesis and hybridity, rather than from trying to maintain some kind of rigid, pure definition?
That's a great question. Okay, theme two connects back to that core idea you introduced, the archive versus the novel.
Right. The novel's inherent job in this tradition, according to Echeverria, is opposition. It is the necessary counter-narrative. It stands against those official, authoritative, non-literary discourses, the archive. And so fiction, paradoxically, becomes the truest, most complete story of the continent. It makes you think critically, doesn't it? When you read a major news story or an official report today, are you instinctively looking for the deeper, maybe more complex human truth that the simple official narrative might be obscuring or leaving out?
It definitely encourages that kind of reading. And the third major theme you highlighted is that literature in Latin America is almost without exception a political act. It's also a form of cultural memory work.
Absolutely. You can't really separate aesthetics from politics in this context. In a region so often marked by dictatorship, censorship, historical trauma, writing itself becomes an act of resistance. It preserves marginalized perspectives. It uses allegory, symbolism, sometimes surrealism, to evade the censors and ensure that certain truths survive. It's often a literal act of social justice carried out through the power of the imagination.
Powerful stuff. Okay, let's try to pull out some core memorable ideas from the book, those concepts that really stick with you long after you finish reading. What's the first one that comes to mind?
For me, it has to be that core principle of the boom we discussed. Magical realism is not an escape from reality. but a way of representing a reality too complex for conventional realism.
Yeah.
It reframes it completely. It's not fantasy. It's an intellectual tool, an epistemological tool, that proved that sometimes, in certain contexts like Latin America's, a strictly realistic narrative is actually the most distorting way to try and tell the truth.
That's a fantastic point. Okay, a second core idea maybe explains how they achieved that global success without just, you know, imitating others. The book argues something like, the periphery became the center by remaining true to its peripheral condition.
Yes, that's the paradox of authenticity, isn't it? They didn't achieve world influence by just copying the latest literary trends from Paris or London or New York. They did it by developing these highly distinctive, incredibly authentic voices that emerged solely from their specific, unique cultural and historical circumstances. Global influence came from radical local specificity, not homogenization.
I love that. And finally, that really powerful idea related to the archive, the concept you mentioned of intellectual patricide.
Yeah, it's a striking term Echevarria uses. He notes that the modern novelistic tradition was born from a foundational act of patricide, the killing of the narrative authority of the lettered city and its archives. The lettered city, that was the colonial elite, the established writers, lawyers, historians, who held all the power to define reality through official texts.
So the novelist comes along and...
The novelist basically usurped their power, yeah. Claim the right, the authority, to tell the comprehensive story of the continent, including all the parts the archive left out. It was about liberating the narrative from the clutches of official, often oppressive, power.
Wow. That is such a potent lens for thinking about application. How do we take this idea of challenging the archive and maybe apply it to our own lives today, especially, you know, in this modern age of just constant information overload?
Well, I think it's the ultimate lesson in media literacy and critical thinking, really. If you start to treat the daily news cycle or official corporate statements, government statistics, even maybe academic pronouncements as a kind of modern archive,
okay,
then Echevarria's work teaches you to always look for the novel hidden within or behind it. Look for the underlying assumptions, the inherent fictions shaping the narrative, the voices that have maybe been silenced or marginalized. For instance, you could argue that really good investigative journalism often acts as that counter novel today, providing the complex, messy, human truth that a streamlined official report might gloss over.
That makes a lot of sense. And on a more human level, perhaps, the book does such a great job of replacing those simplistic, often negative stereotypes we might have about Latin America, you know, just political instability or exoticism, with this portrait of profound intellectual sophistication, cultural richness, and incredible resilience. It feels like it fosters much needed global empathy.
It certainly does. I agree. It provides a really nuanced understanding of identity, not as something fixed or pure, but as this dynamic, ongoing, creative process of negotiation and blending. It shows powerfully how hybrid cultural identities, the mestizaje, are not a weakness, but actually sources of enormous strength and, frankly, boundless creativity.
For me, what I think I loved most about diving into this work was the insight that the formal innovation, you know, Borges creating his labyrinths, Cortázar playing with nonlinear structures, wasn't just about stylistic games. It wasn't just art for art's sake.
No, it felt necessary.
Exactly. It felt like a political necessity. It was required to break free from the traditional logic, the traditional literary forms that were simply inadequate to represent the often chaotic, multi-layered, deeply historical, sometimes surreal Latin American reality. Literature in this context truly was a tool of liberation.
And that, I think, confirms the final, most valuable lesson Echevarria offers us here. Literature is a world-building force. These novelists didn't just describe their continent in a very real sense. They fundamentally invented it in their fiction. They created this vital narrative space where identity could be contested, explored, understood. And that just confirms the inherently political and profoundly subversive potential of the human imagination. Fiction, when wielded by masters like these, truly became the most comprehensive, most human form of truth.
See you next time with another remarkable thinker, another powerful book, and another idea that has shaped our world. This audio summary is brought to you by Acotra Foundation.